Okay, let's do a short parsha. This is a Rashi I come back to a lot, but I want to think about it a bit methodologically. So beginning of Parshat Yitro, Rashi asks, what is it? Vayishma Yitro, Yitro came, and Rashi following in Chazal asks, well, what is it? What was the proximate cause for him coming? And he quotes, and he says two things. One is that he heard about the Melchamet Amalek, which was the end of last week's Parsha, and the second is that he heard Kriyat Yam Suf. Now, I want to focus on this Rashi methodologically, because there's a big question in general in Rashi. Why does he quote the positions in Chazal that he quotes? Right, so some believe that, because he doesn't quote all Midrashim, right, and sometimes he'll quote a Midrash and say, Al Derech HaPshat X, but Al Derech HaGadah Y, and sometimes he won't do that. So there's discussion, is Rashi only quoting Midrashim that he felt answer an actual Pshat question? Right, does he, well, what exactly are the standards that he uses to quote a Rashi? Now, in this case, it's particularly striking. What I want to do is share mostly what I was thinking about as I was editing Rabbi Price's Drasha for this week. So there's a few problems, even with how he quotes Chazal, beyond the normal one, which is why does he quote the positions that he does? And that is that if you look at the Gemara or the Midrash, they also have the same discussion. If you just take the Gemara, for example, the Gemara has three positions. Right? The Gemara has these two positions, but it's quoted as a machloket. Right? One shita says that he heard Kriyat Yam Suf. The second shita holds that he heard Melchamet Amalek. And the third position, I think it's Rabbi Shur, Rabbi Elazar, Rabbi Elazar HaModai. Rabbi Elazar HaModai says he heard Matan Torah. Right? He heard about Matan Torah. Yes. Right? Now, I don't know, right? Does that mean he hears that Matan Torah is coming? Is it after Matan Torah, which comes to Machloket, whether you think this is chronological or not, right, etc. So, right, Price asks, is that there's a lot of problems with Rashi, right? Just basic methodology. First of all, why does Rashi quote two positions and not three? Second of all, why does the positions that he quote, right, why does he quote the positions he quote and exclude them? Right, meaning he takes the Gemara, he excludes one position, he presents it as if they're both right or two sides of the same coin, rather than as a machloket. I mean, what is he doing, right? And all of that is, of course, compounded by the fact that the whole midrash is odd because the simple pshat of the pasuk is Yitro heard what happened in Mitzrayim, right? Is the Exodus, which nobody quotes, right? None of the shita in the midrash quotes. So you look at it and you're like, okay, what is going on? So you look at Rashi. And you could say, well, there's a machloket in the Gemara, and either Rashi thought that two were plausible and one wasn't. Right? Again, why? I don't know. Maybe he thought that he thinks it's chronological, and therefore this is before Matan Torah, and therefore you couldn't have heard about it, or maybe he thinks that hearing in anticipation, who knows? Right? Who knows what's motivating Rashi, right? But you could say, look, he rejects one position, he accepts two. So then how would you deal with the fact that Rashi quotes them as agreeing? Right? So either he really means it's a machloket, right? Or he hasn't decided and he doesn't really mean to quote it as one position. He's just quoting alternatives, right? You gotta, right? You know, and you could do anything like this. And all of those methodological assumptions would assume something along the lines of, when Rashi selectively quotes from Midrash, he is doing some sort of sifting process, some selection process, right? And therefore, however you want to interpret it, right? He's quoting two, he's quoting two of three, he's quoting the two that he likes. He doesn't. Maybe he thinks that in the Gemara they're arguing, but they could theoretically both be right. Maybe he thinks in the Gemara it's not a machloket, right? Maybe it's a question of degree. Right? They all agree that it was all these things, right? But it was more this, more that, and therefore he quotes both. I mean, right? You could do a whole bunch of things, but you all assume that Rashi is doing a sifting process. But then there are people like, right, right, Price's assumption is Rashi. Look at Rashi and say, well, Mapi Tel, right? If he's quoting two, he must be quoting it the way it is in the Gemara. In the Gemara, it's Machloke, right? And then if there's a third position, so he doesn't want to assume that Rashi is rejecting it. So what does he do? And this is, I think, a very interesting drash move. And again, it belies a certain assumption about the way Rashi works. So Rabbi Price says, no. If there are three positions in the Gemara which are presented as a machloket, and Rashi quotes two and doesn't present it as a machloket, takes away the names, right? So we can solve all the problems by assuming that Rashi really thinks that they're all saying the same thing, What do you do with the rejected position? So you could have said it's rejected, but he says, no. Why would I reject the position in Chazal if I assume Rashi's building in Chazal? So what's the other methodological possibility? You could do that. Or you could say, right, you could do something like that, Girsa, but right, Price doesn't. I think there's a very classic Drash move to say no. Really, there's only one position in the Gemara, and that is Matan Torah. And there are two expressions of it, which are Amalek and Kriyat Yamsuf, and somehow this is all the same, and everybody doesn't need to quote it because it's manifest here, right? Now, that's a very interesting assumption that Rashi works. I'll give you the way he does it. So he says, how in God's name do you get to what I just said? So Rabbi Price goes like this. It's not enough to hear about the miracles. One second, I'm giving delayed parsha. Okay. So he says, well, let's think about it, right? It's not just enough for him to hear about the miracles. Right? There has to be something, this is what many people point to, that maybe what Chazal are saying, right? This is, he doesn't quite spell, but a lot of people do, which is, yes, the Psukim say Yamsuf. That's not the question, sorry, say Mitzrayim. That's not the question. He heard the miracles, that's why he came. But there's two questions you have to ask. One is, what in the background inspired him to say, I want to be part of the Jews? And the other thing is, as we all know, sometimes you are impressed, inspired, but it takes something to, right? And I'm just going to finish Parsha. Yeah, 2 minutes, okay? So for example, right, you could say, why do you go to Shacharis in the morning? So the answer, Bigadol, might be you believe in God and you want to communicate with God or whatever, but you're teenagers, no offense, right? And the question of why did you come in the morning or how did you get up in the morning is because your parents woke you up, because Yaakov woke you up, because Moshe woke you up, because Dardik woke you up, Mamashi, right? So many people point to this and say, listen, in the background, obviously Mitzrayim, but he might have said, listen, that's really nice, but I have a nice business going on here in Midian. Yeah, someday I'll get there. Yeah, yeah, yeah. That is, by the way, how, and I've quoted this before, how Ruchaim Shmulevitz takes it. He says, the pshat is Mitzrayim is what motivated him. But what gave him the push? So he said, listen, you might just let it, you know, go on forever, right? What happened? He saw that by Yamsuf, someone jumped in, right? Okay. But then he might say, okay, thanks, that's great, yeah. Amalek, what did he see by Amalek? That inspiration wore off really quickly. The whole world saw what happened. And yet a few weeks later, Amalek is coming and fighting the Jews. What he learned from Amalek is inspiration can wear off. He said, ah, okay, that's it. I can't leave this in the back burner. I got to go now, right? So that's Rav Chaim Shmulevitz's solution, right? Price looks at it and he says, ah. Sure, he's inspired by Mitzrayim, but it needs to be more than just that. That proves that there's a God, but to prove that you're going to commit to this lifestyle, what's going to make you do that next move? So he says, the answer is that it takes Mesiras Nefesh, and it takes the ability to realize the importance of doing something for its own sake. And he says, this is what you see. Because Amalek, what's Amalek? Amalek for him is the paradigm of people who do the wrong thing for its own sake. They do sins lishma, right? They are just radical evil. Kriyat Yamsuf, when the Jews jump into the sea, right, as the Midrash has it, right, that's the opposite. That's Mesiras Nefesh, that's good for the sake of good, right? They don't know what's going to happen yet, right? And he says, where does the world learn that the life you should live is one where you do the right thing for its own sake? Matan Torah. He says, that's what Matan Torah gives us. That Matan Torah teaches us not only do the right thing, but you do it for its own sake. And therefore, the way he does it, again, you could go in different directions, but I want to show you methodologically what he's doing. He's saying, look, right? If I want to make it that Rashi is quoting this not as a machloket and somehow is not ignoring a sheet in the Gemara, so what he says is, Matan Torah is the moment in which the Jews commit to a lifestyle of Mesiras Nefesh, of doing the right thing for its own sake. Right? And that manifests itself in two ways. One is by showing how the Jews express that commitment by jumping into the sea, and the other is by showing the exact opposite. Right? And therefore, he looks at Rashi and he says, if he's quoting it not as a machloket, and he's quoting without the third shita, that's because he thinks that it's not a machloket, and the third shita is somehow expressed by these two. Right? And that, like I said, is a, right, he doesn't spell it out this way, but I'm methodologically, right, I think it's very important, right, to ask the question, what do we think Rashi is doing? Right? And if you think Rashi is quoting different positions, he's not so careful, or he's sifting, so fine, then you could just say that. But if you assume that every time Rashi is quoting something, what he's really doing is giving you an interpretation of the holistic position of Chazal, and he's not rejecting, he's not sifting, right? So then you need to come and figure out, right, midrashically, or whatever, homiletically, how that which he quotes somehow encapsulates the entire discussion, and his selective quoting is in fact an interpretation. And that's what Rabbi Price does. He says, aha, right, his selective quoting without the shitot is telling you that these aren't machloket, and in fact these two are somehow a function of Matan Torah, right, which I think methodologically is a fascinating approach to Rashi, and also, right, right, and also it provides this beautiful, right, midrashic understanding of what is going on and how all these events are connected. Okay.